Greetings, welcome, wherever you are across the fruited plain, it is Eric Erickson from Atlanta, Georgia. Yep, not New York, where so many people broadcast from. I kind of like to keep it in a red state, or mostly red state these days. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Speaking of Georgia, Brian Kemp, the governor, who Donald Trump is no longer a fan of, kicked off his re-election campaign in Perry, Georgia over the weekend, and did so very near the Middle Georgia Airport where Donald Trump came to campaign for him 4 years ago. It's a striking dichotomy now. Trump is out for revenge with a number of candidates. He spoke at CPAC. The guy could run in 2024 on a "See, I told you so" campaign, which to some degree it sounds like he may be going to. With some of his statements.
So the stock market is doing well, but that's also habit a little bit. Mm-hmm. That can change very quickly because inflation is going to become terrible. Mm-hmm. When I left, it was $1.87 a gallon for gasoline. Now it's $3.50, and it's going to go much, much higher. We were energy independent. Within another month or so at this rate, we will not be energy independent. We're going to need Russia, Saudi Arabia, the Middle East. We're going to need all of this. Lumber prices are through the roof. All the prices, meat prices, food prices. If you have inflation, we saw it during Jimmy Carter's reign. Jimmy Carter had inflation. Prime rate went to 22%. The economy crashed. They're going to have to be very careful. The economy is very fragile. You're going to have tremendous inflation. And if you have inflation, only bad things can happen.
Yeah, he's right. And by the way, you should note that the economy is, economists are now saying in the economy that inflation is going to be baked in for a while, which is not great. He took the stage, President Trump did, at CPAC, and he gave an interview on Fox News, really making the rounds over the weekend as he begins to rev up campaigns against Republicans headed into 2022, people he's nursing grudges against, Liz Cheney and the like, people voted against him with impeachment, but also Brian Kemp in Georgia, who he blames. I am told that there are some Republicans who are reaching out privately saying, make it after Raffensperger. You've taken out Jeff Duncan. Leave Kemp alone. We'll get into that if we have time, but here's a little more of the president.
Republicans must never waver in demanding that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Can't let it happen. Thank you. Thank you very much. But it's not only the Second Amendment that the leftists want to destroy. They are hard at work to abolish the First Amendment as well. Probably all amendments when you get right down to it. Why not? The radical left and big tech's attack on free speech is unlawful. It's unconstitutional. And it is completely un-American.
Completely un-American. This is what we're dealing with right now. I got a piece. I want you to consider it. I hope maybe you'll dwell on it a little bit. I actually put some thought and time into writing it. The Twilight of Ideas, on how to keep faith in a political realignment. If you text the word data to 33777, you can get a link to it. And I want to talk to you about it because it relates to some of what President Trump was saying. The conservative movement at the moment is out of ideas. Many of the ideas that the conservative movement invested in for a very long time are ideas that many conservatives are now beginning to reject. So I tell people all the time, when I get asked, why are you a conservative? And I don't believe that I have changed my conservatism. What I find really frustrating is a lot of people who claim to be conservative clearly aren't, but call themselves conservative just so they can say others who have never changed their principles are no longer conservative. I've always been a conservative, and I believe today, and I'm writing today, things that a decade ago I still believed in. I'm a Christian before all things. I am a Christian. I don't make apologies for it. Some of you get mad at me for spending time on matters of faith on this program, but I am. It's who I am. It defines who I am, as it's supposed to. Because I'm a Christian, I know that we are all sinners. We all fall short of the glory of God. Because we are all sinners, I want as few in charge of me as possible, which is why I'm a small government conservative. The fewer sinners in charge of me, the better. Now, for a long time, conservatives embraced the idea government needs to get out of the way. We should have a free marketplace of ideas. We should be able to live our lives as we want. Conservatives embrace negative liberties and progressives embrace positive liberties. Now, what's the difference? A negative liberty is I can do all of these things if government gets out of my way. And a positive liberty is I cannot do all of these things unless government helps me. So a conservative says the government needs to get out of regulation. The government needs to get out of our lives. The government needs to get out of every which way. Let me do it myself and do the bare minimum things that I can't do, like deliver the mail, which I can't do, and build a military, which I can't do. The left believes, well, I want to be a master of puppets. Therefore, the government needs to give me health care and needs to keep me safe and needs to give me a home and gives me a universal basic income so I can be happy in my pursuit of happiness. That's positive liberty. Conservatives have tended to reject it. For a long time, though, conservatives and liberals have embraced the idea of liberty and have just argued over the negative or the positive aspects of it. The left wanted a greater social safety net so they could pursue their happiness. The right wanted greater freedom to fail, but also to succeed. You should not be punished for that success. The arguments we've had have largely been arguments with a shared vernacular, an idiomatic expression that we've all shared. We've all been able to make arguments about how to put the next step forward as a nation, and we've shared a common moral underpinning. But right now, something's happening in culture. We don't all share the same vernacular anymore. We don't all share the same common moral underpinnings. In fact, many of us, I would argue, are immoral or amoral, not very moral. We don't share the same moral fabric as a society. We're not arguing anymore about how to put the next step forward. We're arguing about which direction we should go at all. We're in the middle of a political realignment. And that political realignment is playing out on both sides as Democrats drift to the left. Republicans aren't really drifting more to the right, but they're dividing up the right in what we should believe with. A lot of friends of mine have given up on classical liberalism, for example, the laissez-faire attitude of the modern conservative movement that just get the government out of the way and let us thrive. They see the left by us getting out of the way and letting people thrive has hijacked that system and embedded themselves within corporations and bureaucracies and government. The left has moved into the Fortune 500 so that now it's very easy to cancel conservatives. It's easy to cancel advertisements and talk radio or Fox News. Harry's Razors is a great example of that. Harry's Razors dropped me as an advertiser a while back because progressives complained. And then Quip, the toothbrush company, which I still use, Harry's and Quip, I still like the companies, but they dropped me as advertisers because progressives complained that they were advertising with a conservative. They just dropped Ben Shapiro as well and several others because progressives have dominant clout within the Fortune 500. We say leave well enough alone, let these businesses be businesses. And the left says, all right, we're going to hijack them and we're going to steer them to the left and embrace left causes, and then we're going to use your rhetoric against you, conservatives, when these businesses turn left. But there's something else happening as well here. We're in a postmodern moment, and in postmodernity, doubts outweigh truth. In fact, postmodernity believes there's no objective truth. You've got your truth, I've got my truth. Reality itself is shaped by our words, not by what is actually happening. And devotion to a belief necessitates performance in that belief. So you can't just say, I believe something. You have to beclown yourself, scream it, pound your chest, write books about it, get on Twitter, denounce others who don't share your views in order to show that you're committed to your truth. You've got to engage in performance. I would submit to you that the American experiment that believes there are self-evident truths like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness is not compatible with postmodernity. And yet here we are as a society in postmodernity. So we get boisterous performances on the left and the right. The left engages in protest, cancel culture, demands for citizenship or censorship. The right engages in protests, cancel culture, demands for censorship. the left claims the nation is systemically racist and they're fundamentally flawed, and yet everything they say is unfalsifiable. It's a statement that you can't even falsify it, which means it's probably not true. The right, actually, from the, I find this very funny, a lot of people in conservative think tanks funded by the free market start screaming, what is conservatism conserved? I hear that from so many people who've been able to go out and buy guns because conservatism conserved that, among other things. The chief driver of the right now, and the left really, is not ideas, but disdain for the other side, contempt for the other side, fear and loathing of the other side. On the right, we got some people like J.D. Vance, who's running Ohio. I'm fascinated by his candidacy, but one of the things that bothers me is he's embracing unionism. He wants to revitalize private sector unions, which would then fund progressives and also drive up our costs of doing business, which would actually make us more dependent on China. We see some on the right who want some sort of Catholic authoritarianism. They want to demand it. We instill the natural law. We teach this in schools, which isn't a bad idea. But then when they talk about it, it seems like they almost want some sort of Catholic hierarchy or Catholic values taught in schools and brought into society. And as a Calvinist, I'm kind of opposed to that. But yet they're writing books about it and doing some big thinking about common good conservatism. The problem here is that people of faith, particularly Christians, understand how this all ends. It gets worse for us before it gets better. In fact, worldliness is going to dominate. The persecution of the church is going to get even worse before it gets better. But all of this right now is in large part because conservatives really feel like conservatism has failed. Now, why? Because conservatism was so successful, even the left could take advantage of the system conservatism built and then turn it against us. So, for example, Twitter, Facebook, Fortune 500 companies, Amazon could not have succeeded in a socialist regime. They succeeded in a free market capitalist system conservatism itself propped up. But then in so doing and getting big, they then derive for themselves from government protections that kind of turn capitalism into corporatism. And embedded within them, social justice warriors of the left who now use those companies to silence conservatives. And so conservatives are like, our enterprise failed, and now we need something with more teeth. And yes, you probably do need something with more teeth, which also gets to you the really, to some degree, uncivil, unhinged, angry reaction to that New York Times op-ed about critical race theory that David French and others were with, the outright denunciations of David French. Here's what's going on here. You got a group of people on the right who want to fight back against the left. And now the best that a lot of the classical liberalism, modern conservative movement is offering is, well, you can't get the democratically elected legislature to pass a law prohibiting critical race theory from being done. How the hell does that work? I got a democratically elected legislature. The left uses education and curriculum to advance critical race theory. Why can't I, through my elected representative, say you're not allowed to use taxpayer money to do that? It sounds like abdication and capitulation. So the right's got to have some ideas. How do you preserve conservatism? And one of the most dangerous ideas is that we now need some robust strengthening of conservatives in Washington through government to punish businesses. The problem here is that the only way to keep the left from using the power against you is to never give up the power. How do you build up power in Washington, D.C. to punish the left without then building and setting the precedents the left uses to punish you? You can't unless you give up democracy. Except there is one way forward, and it's probably the best way forward, the way the founders wanted us to go forward, that maybe conservatives should reconnect to, which I'll tell you about when we come back. It is Eric Erickson here, and you can call in 877-973-7425. In fact, let's go back to the phones. I am going to go to Steve calling. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Hey, Eric, love your show here. I just want to comment on your previous segment about this accused murderer and how in the past he had not really paid any price for what he's done.
Right.
So specifically, I have a son, first-time offender, attempted to rob somebody with a toy gun, ended up getting shot in the incident, and spent 10 years in prison.
Jeez.
And I don't know how justice is equal in a case like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we've got, at the federal level, typically uniform sentencing guidelines, and states leave a lot of discretion to judges. Now, there's been some movement in the past few years at both the federal and state level to declare the uniform prison sentencing standards unconstitutional. Antonin Scalia became pretty vocal about uniform prison sentences over time. But yeah, you compare an incident like that to the number of times that this guy got out. You know, there's this massive mythology out there about, for example, the how white men get so much more favorable treatment than black men in prison. And oftentimes the statistics do not bear this stuff out in any way, shape, or form. They just don't. And yet we continually hear the statistics, or we continue to hear the mythology. And there is a wide variety of standards out there. And a lot of judges with a lot of discretion don't necessarily do what they should do. Gun crimes in particular, though, are treated far more harshly in the country, even with a fake gun, than drug crimes are. But oftentimes drug crimes can be precursors to other things. It's not just like people talk about marijuana as a gateway drug. A lot of times people who are seriously involved in the illegal sale and trading of trafficking of drugs then go on to worse stuff, and we miss this. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Listener on Twitter tweeted at me and said that the conservative movement itself, we don't have a problem with it. It's a lot of people who get elected claiming to be conservative, or that they talk tough on TV or talk radio, and they're not really conservative. And I do think that that is part of a problem. This gets into postmodernism again, though. I don't want to get too esoteric here, but a lot of people just want to be entertained these days, and so you get a lot of people on television because they're on your favorite television channel, or your favorite talk show host has them on regularly. You think, well, this guy must be a conservative, and they're not. And the conservative movement, in large part, we're at this point where this can happen because I do think the conservative movement is out of ideas. The larger conservative movement is still running Ronald Reagan's playbook. Let's talk tough on commies, which we need to do. Let's cut taxes, which we need to do. But what about the rest of social ills? And unfortunately, I do think that there's an authoritarian element within the conservative movement right now over cancel culture, that we've got to cancel them before they cancel us, as opposed to advocating ideas that will strengthen society and not enable and embolden progressivism. I want to talk about that when we come back, because I don't know that I'm the intellectual warrior on this stuff, but I got a few ideas of things that I think need to happen, should happen. In fact, I got 7 policy prescriptions that I think that conservatives, that Republicans should be embracing, some of which will be very painful and very unpopular, but I think they should do it anyway. I want to talk about those when we come back. I'm happy to take your ideas as well. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We do need to get into some of this critical theory stuff, though, because NBC News is being used by the left to push back against conservatives. And apparently the new idea from the left is that parents are just too stupid to understand what is and isn't critical theory, even though the parents are the ones who know best of all what it is. And there's just some real disparagement of parents now happening in newspapers across the country over critical theory that I want to get to when we come back. Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson. I am just so glad to have you with me this Monday. I do hope you had a good weekend. My weekend was good. Took the boy to his favorite barbecue. So my 12-year-old has a favorite barbecue place. It is in Gray, Georgia, which is in the middle of the state, in a place that looks like a strong gust of wind could make it fall over, which you know means it is grade A barbecue called Old Clinton Barbecue. And he loves their smoked turkey breasts more than anything on the planet. And I'll tell you what, They have crinkle fries. And you know how, like, can we just acknowledge as an aside here, the waffle fry at Chick-fil-A is mediocre. I realize those are fighting words for some. I get waffle fries from Chick-fil-A that I find stellar, that tend to be in the fryer a little longer. But typically, they are soggy, greasy, and floppy. As my kid used to say when he was little, he didn't like the waffle fries at Chick-fil-A because they were floppy like a fish. And they were. You hold it, and I mean, the thing flops around. So this barbecue joint, Old Clinton Barbecue, down in the middle of Georgia, in Gray, Georgia, they have crinkle fries. And, you know, you can get crinkle fries in a lot of places, like Zaxby's, the chicken finger place. They give you crinkle fries, but sometimes they're not cooked enough, and they're floppy like the greasy waffle fries at Chick-fil-A. Well, this place, I mean, they keep their crinkle fries in the fryer a long time happy in the fryer, and they are crisp and delicious, and I could eat a whole platter of their crinkle fries, and so can he, along with smoked turkey. It was great. That was basically how I spent my Saturday. And then I went and got fly fishing gear because I'm going to the mountains. I'm going to go fly fishing again. I am. A second time by myself. No guide with me. A buddy of mine, his parents, God bless them. I these people are so sweet to me. And they let me access their farm up in North Georgia. And I can go stand in the cold Chattahoochee water. My joints feel unbelievable. And I can fly fish. And I actually caught some the last time. And those of you who know me will appreciate this, I touched a live fish with my bare hands and did not scream for my wife. All right. I'm going to go back there. And I'm going to try to catch a fish again. Now, I must move on. The Twilight of Ideas. If you want to read this piece, and I do actually, particularly if you're a Christian, if you're a preacher, if you're a Christian, I got some thoughts on how you've got to navigate this weird age of political realignment we're in. If you text the word data to 33777, I will send it back to you. You really should read it. And it's not to toot my own horn. It's actually that there are some thoughts I get asked all the time by people, like, the world has gone bat poop crazy. I feel like I'm a spectator. I used to be a diehard member of the Republican Party or the conservative movement, and now I just feel like everyone's gone insane. What do I do? What's my place in the world? Well, that's what this piece is largely about. You finding your place. You listen to a political talk show. You're involved in politics, but you think both parties are bat poop crazy right now. You're not the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene. You're not the party of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You're a Christian who wants sound, small government, and you got one side says we need to use the government to punish the other side. The other side says, no, we need to use it to punish you. And you're like, what? Where the hell do I fit in this? Well, text the word data to 33777. Read what I wrote. There are seven things, though, that I think conservatives, if you really want good ideas for the future, here are seven basic ideas. Number one, you got to continue the assault on the federal government. If the federal government's the provider and securer of all our liberties, whoever controls the power controls our liberty, and one side's going to get that power and refuse to give it up. The best way forward is to do what the founders wanted, which was federalism. Divide the power up among the 50 states, make Washington the least powerful part of it, and then also in Washington, D.C., strengthen the Congress. Bring the House of Representatives up to 1,000 members. We're at 435 members of the House right now. Make it 1,000. What does that do? It makes it more likely you're going to know your member of Congress. You will know your member of Congress because the congressional districts will be smaller. Therefore, your congressman will be more likely to have to hear from you on a regular basis and know what his constituents want. It would actually be a good thing. And then you need to elect people who are going to stand up to their own leadership and not just be a herd. Right now, we got too many people in Congress who just want to be led by their leaders, and their leaders will do whatever the party of the White House wants. They won't stand up for themselves. Congress is a separate, independent branch. You got to strengthen Congress, and in strengthening Congress, have these 1,000 members of the House fight each other, plus the 100 members of the Senate. Second, and I want you to pay attention to this one, particularly if you've got money. And I know I got some wealthy listeners, and I need you to listen to this. Stop pouring money into Washington think tanks. Pour money into setting up private schools that the poor can go to in urban areas. You're so worried about indoctrination. why are conservatives pouring money into think tanks in Washington instead of pouring money into a charity that sets up not-for-profit schools around the country in urban areas where the poor can go, that are easily accessible, local neighborhood schools, where instead of getting indoctrinated by progressives, they get reading, writing, and arithmetic? Whatever happened to the neighborhood school, the small school, where the older kids help the younger kids? Whatever happened to that? Why don't we get back to it? Why don't you put your money where your mouth is? You know, as an aside, there's a church. I'm a fan of the pastor. Jed is the pastor's name. It's up in the Franklin, Nashville area, Redemption City. And they have a farm. This church has a farm. The church grows vegetables. They harvest the vegetables and they give them to the poor. They seek the welfare of the city in which they live. They pray for it. They do what the Bible says. They're doing social justice the Bible way. They're not demanding the government do things. They're not agitating for government reform. They don't go protest. They don't demand the government engage in social justice. They go grow vegetables and they feed the poor. High quality, nutritious vegetables. They give them to food banks. They give them to the poor. They harvest them. The church members learn a skill and they go help their poor. They harvest. I saw them the other day. It had a picture. I forget what the vegetables were that they were harvesting, but they're seasonal. They do winter root vegetables. They do summer stuff. They store stuff. They've learned to preserve stuff, and they give it to the poor. It's what so many churches could be doing, but so many conservative evangelical churches in particular, they let the government do everything. Oh, it's the Methodists running the food bank. We're not going to run the food bank. We're feeding the soul. Well, how do you feed the soul of a hungry person who can't hear the spirit because he's hearing the growl in his stomach? You send him over to the Methodist church to the food bank, and then you hope they'll come back for your gospel message. Seek the welfare of the community in which you live. And part of that is stop sending money to think tanks in Washington that already have enough money and start funding local schools around the country where the poor kids can go so they're getting an education instead of indoctrination. Third, in corporate welfare of all kinds, taxes, legislative loopholes, regulatory perks that allow big corporations to protect themselves from the creative destruction of the marketplace. We have allowed major corporations in this country to avoid the consequences of their actions by protecting them from competition. Stop that. Fourth, and this is a painful one that there really won't be a big constituency for, but let the banks and the financial institutions collapse. Let them. The government has created a lot of moral hazard. When Kelly Loeffler was in the Senate, she and I talked about this. The government has created a lot of moral hazard. They keep bailing out financial institutions that should be allowed to go bankrupt. And they say, well, we can't. They're too big to fail. We can't let them. And so you know what happens? Other businesses learn the lesson of, hey, I need to get too big to fail, and then the government will bail me out. So they engage in a bunch of morally risky, morally hazardous behavior to get themselves so big that then the government says, well, we got to bail them out now. Stop it. Let them fail. Let them crash. Let them go out of business. Let the marketplace pick over the carcass. Fifth, in the student loan market, ban student loans altogether, particularly for graduate school. Ban them. Except for the deserving poor, the necessary poor with Pell Grants and the like, stop giving out student loans. What's happened is you've allowed academic institutions to have market-distorting forces that have raised tuition beyond inflation. And a lot of these institutions, let's be real honest, there are a lot of colleges and universities around this country that need to and should die and only stay alive because of the student loan marketplace. Let them die. A few out-of-work professors wouldn't be a bad thing. Maybe they'll have to get real jobs. When I drive home between Atlanta, I'm in the studio in Atlanta. When I drive back to Macon, I pass Tift College. Tift College was an all-women's education institution. And that college is now abandoned. It's now actually a state facility. Tift College was merged into Mercer University, my alma mater. It went out of business. Couldn't keep its doors open. There should be more Tift colleges in the world where other enterprises have now taken over campuses because those colleges have gone out of business. The student loan market props up a bunch of institutions and keeps them going when they deserve to collapse. Sixth, allow the states to disagree. Do you know California now bans travel, state-funded travel, to 30% of the nation? Because the California government has decided that Texas and Louisiana and Kansas and Oklahoma and Florida and other states have implemented policies California is opposed to, so it bars its state employees from going to those. I think that states should be allowed to disagree, but you should disallow states sanctioning each other for that disagreement. California should be allowed to have different legislative policies from Texas, but should not be able to try to punish Texas for its policies. And then that gets me 2.7. And this is where I think there's got to be some rethinking of the conservative movement's laissez-faire aspect. We've got to resist the urge to elect people who would impose from Washington a common good, when history shows the elite and the wealthy are going to be the ones to decide what that common good is. And it's inevitably going to be godless and hedonistic, even if it's wrapped in a veneer of moral preening. I got a number of friends of mine, good friends of mine in the conservative movement, who've embraced this idea that government and judges should impose a common good. Who is going to impose the common good? It's going to be Harvard Yard. The morality of Harvard Yard will decide the common good. A lot of posers will decide the common good, and I think that's bad. Instead, I think you got to empower people at local levels to live in communities of interest. And here's where you use the government: to prevent corporations and other governments from discriminating against or punishing local communities that have adopted morally conservative things. So, for example, Georgia does not have a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I hope that Georgia will become one of the two-thirds of states that do. Now, it's been Republicans who have blocked this. In Georgia, it's Republicans who block school choice. It's Republicans who block education reform. It's Republicans who block religious liberty legislation. I hope Governor Kemp, in an election, will use it to rally conservatives and say we need to have RFRA and get the Republicans in the legislature to pass it. Two-thirds of states have RFRA. All RFRA says is that if you want to impose a secular governmental policy on religious people, you've got to have a real reason to treat all religious people the same way as everyone else, as opposed to making an exception for religious people. RFRA is how Hobby Lobby does not have to pay for abortions. But when Georgia tries to do this, like the fetal heartbeat ban, when Texas tries to do election reform, when Oklahoma tries to, or Mississippi tries to enact policies that prohibit boys from playing on girls' sports teams, inevitably Hollywood and major Fortune 500 companies say, well, we're not going to do business in your state. Therein is where I think conservatism is cracking up and where we're going to have to come up with new policy ideas. A Fortune 500 company and another state perhaps should not be able to discriminate against the conservative state. Perhaps a conservative state should be allowed to live out its morality and then tell corporations, you can't punish the state, you can't boycott the state. Now, conservatism, mainstream modern conservatism, classical liberalism would say, no, if the corporation doesn't want to do business in Georgia because Georgia passed the fetal heartbeat ban, then they don't have to. But yet we have seen time and again Republican politicians put money ahead of principle. And so they say, well, we can't pass this law because, well, Disney may stop filming films in our state. You probably need to pass a law in some way, come up with it, that these social media companies can't ban conservatives. And also, you probably need to pass a law that says you can't discriminate against these states. Now, I don't know how that would work. And philosophically, I still like the idea that you should be able to pass a law and a corporation could say, I'm not going to do business there. The problem is that the left has hijacked these businesses now and always steers their policy towards progressive states. So it's always conservative states with conservative voters who are forced through economic pain to give up their moral way of living. And they say, well, if you don't want to give it up, that's fine, but you're going to pay economic consequence. And if you don't like the economic consequence, I guess your values aren't that big a deal to you. I think this progressive intolerance at home in the Fortune 500 is going to cause conservatism to snap and impose some pretty draconian rules on corporations. And I think we need to be thinking about this and coming up with a solution, because it really isn't good, I think, to have the Fortune 500 so in the tank for the left these days that when a state like Georgia or Texas or Oklahoma or Mississippi passes pro-life legislation, the corporations say, well, we're going to boycott your state now and all the people in your state. there's going to be hell to pay for that. And I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing. I'm so ready to go fly fishing. Y'all, Black Widow is out. The Scarlett Johansson superhero movie, the Marvel movie. You know, they killed her off, and I actually liked her as a character. Other than, like, the Russian accents, which I think were kind of overboard, I kind of liked Black Widow. And I'm kind of sad that she died. But I'm glad that Disney put it out there on TV and in theaters. If you want to pay extra at home, it's worth it. And, you know, it's nice to see she made the movie's going to make like 80 to 90 million at the box office this past weekend, which suggests nature is healing. People are going now. Some of that money is from people paying to rent it at home, but most of it is coming from the box office. I will tell you one movie that really sucked, though, was Space Jam. It actually didn't look good at all. It wasn't very good. It wasn't. But it's nice to see people going back to the theater. I haven't been to a theater yet. I'm ready to go back to a theater. I at Christmas, bought a 90-inch TV and a surround sound system, and I don't know that I need to go back to the theater. Other than we don't have air conditioning on our back porch. It's glassed in. And we had a company that was going to put an air conditioner in, and then the company that actually installed the sunroom decided it had installed the wrong panels for its in-house air conditioning system, and so it can't install an air conditioner, and we got to go find somebody else to put an air conditioner in so I can sit back there without sweating to watch movies. The heat is also bad for the Xbox and the Apple TV and the 90-inch TV, but the TV itself is glorious. It really is. You know what helps as well? Having an Eden Pure Thunderstorm. It actually does help. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm purifies the air, cleans the air. I fried shrimp last night. Now, I fried the shrimp outside because my wife was home and I had to use an umbrella because it was raining, but I left them on the back porch, and the air purifier helps eliminate the fishy, shrimpy smell. It doesn't mask the odor. It eliminates the odor. It also eliminates black mold and mildew. It eliminates pollen. It works for allergies. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm is a great air purifier. It is portable. You can hold it in your hand. You can plug it into the wall. You can plug it in with a USB cord. You can plug it into your car or your RV. It's highly portable and highly effective. And right now, you can get a great discount by going to EdenPureDeals.com. You'll see my name on the front page of the website. You'll see Eric Erickson there. In fact, I'll do it for you. You go to EdenPureDeals.com, and then you will see my name pop up along with other fine radio show hosts, except I'm the best. And then you click on my name, Eric Erickson, and when you do, you'll see you get $10 off the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. But this is what you have to do. Add it to your cart, and then when you click the orange checkout button, you'll see a little discount code. And on the discount code, you put Eric, E-R-I-C-K. Put my name, Eric. I told you all the buy one, get one was last week. You missed your chance, but you can get $10 off the Eden Pure Thunderstorm right now with free shipping by going to EdenPureDeals.com. Click on Eric Erickson. Put it in your cart at checkout. Use my name, Eric, E-R-I-C-K, as your checkout code, and you will get a great air purifier. It's filterless. You don't have to keep buying filters. It's great. All righty. When we come back tomorrow, I had so many things, I got sidetracked on policy ideas that I still got to talk about tomorrow with y'all. See y'all then.